Welcome to Revere Assets, Your Money, with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
And Don Vandenborg.
Telling it like it is.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your stuff?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny, Tim, and Don will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
Because it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, and it matters even less what Danny thinks.
And now, here's your hosts, Danny, Tim, and Don.
So I've been listening to the some back podcast. I like to listen to the sound of my voice.
me too. Yeah, big time.
So I like to go back and
we
just,
know you do.
Well, I'm trying to create an anthology of education between the three of us. Danny, who's in studio with us, Zach, who is a producer here, and
yes.
Don Vandenborg, the portfolio extraordinaire in Augustine, Florida. Hello, Don.
Tim, how are you?
Well, okay, so.
Danny, Zach.
I was about to say, you're not going to say hi to us, Don.
No, he just said hi. Don is the straight man to what's going on here, I'm telling you. And so.
Keeps us centered.
Very centered. Much so. So I was listening to these podcasts, and then what really gets me, though, is the intro to the show. And by the way, Stock Nerds, I've got something very serious I want to talk to you about. We're going to cover the markets here in a moment. And get into all of it and moves and things that we think you should be paying attention to that are beyond the obvious. And so, but I'm listening to the show and I listened to the intro. Zach did the intro. And the intro, I love it because it plays snippets of the show, but there's a part in there where I laugh every time. Like there's a truism.
Yeah.
There's a truism where there comes a point where your dividend yield doesn't justify the price you've lost. Right. And we left that in there. That made the cut from a couple versions of the introduction ago because it's true. It's true in this market right now. And you hear people like this Stephanie Linkster and the Josh Browns and the Joe Terranovas of the world and Steve White, the whole bunch there. And I know I just cited one group of people from one show. But they're saying, you know, how can you not buy XYZ stock with a 7% yield? And it's down 50%. And so you've got that happening on one end. And then on the other, you know, like where we're saying, look, you got to staunch the bleeding. There comes a point where the dividend isn't worth the price depreciation mm-hmm. that's happening to you. And then at the other extreme, in comes Don just with this ridiculous Howard Cosell in person, telling it like it is. And I wonder how many people think that that's really what Don sounds like.
I wonder that myself.
Yeah, I wonder how many people go, huh? Like they just stop if they actually
they think it's really Howard Cosell giving stock advice from beyond.
No, they just think that we've got this crotchety older gentleman down in Florida that pops in to make some market commentary, and his biggest hit for our introduction reel was telling it like it is. And then his next thing is an insult to you, which makes me laugh too.
I'd like to point out both of those were definitely Danny requests.
Yeah.
To put those in. The Howard Cosell one specifically. Yeah.
No, yeah.
And I've been down to Florida, done research with Don.
What are we going to do like everyone else does in the media? Your money, it's so important to you. Like, no kidding, it's important to you.
That's right.
Like, if you can't... I will say this to you. Every investor has every right to be nervous, a little itchy, a little crotchety about what's going on in the market right now. But I'm going to stop and pause right there. A lot of your people don't want to hear this. Okay. And there's a group of people that listen to our show religiously, the Stock Nerds and Market Lovers, that have heard this some iteration of what I'm about to say. Mm-hmm. And then there's a new group of people that have come on board since the Corona. Why do I want to say Corona? Corona. I want to say a chrono. Coronavirus crisis. Say that fast. Corona. Vice. Corona.
Coronavirus crisis.
Say it five times fast.
Corona vice. Okay.
You can't. Zach, can you do it?
What are we doing here? Hold on. Corona, this is a stock show.
Coronavirus crisis. Can you say, that is Don. Can you do that? Can you do that like Howard Cosell?
Yeah. Howard Cosell. Five times fast.
Coronavirus crisis. Coronavirus crisis. See, it can only go so fast when you're Howard Cosell, so I could get through it quickly.
Oh, there you go. So.
And accurately.
So, but a lot of your uppityness, worry, or angst comes from your association with the outcome. And now just hear me out on this, Stock Nerds. You believe so much that you're going to make money in the markets. You believe so much that there's a group of investors out there that don't think there's ever going to be another recession because 65% of the world's passive investing. And if we're all putting money into the system, how can we lose? I'm not making that up. Those are things that have been printed in media.
And it can't go down.
No, because we're every month, like a pyramid scheme, we're all recruiting new people to put in money. Yeah. How can you lose? And so...
isn't that like a Ponzi scheme where they just keep putting money
in? Well, it starts with a P. Pick your P and go with it.
That's right.
And so... But hear me out on this. You're so associated with the outcome that you haven't... I know I'm being a little hyperbolic when I say this, but there's a group of people out there that it's inconceivable that they could lose out. It's inconceivable that their market appreciation won't be as great as the market appreciation from 82 to 2000 or 2001. There's a group of people out there that it doesn't even cross their mind because they just every month put money in and every month it just keeps going up until it doesn't. And so, well, Tim, you know, just to 2018, December, we were down here at these worse losses than this and look how it roared back. And I want to just point out some subtle differences because I hesitate to say this time it's different. I don't want to lead you down that path. What I do want to tell you is that you don't bet against American ingenuity. You don't bet against American entrepreneurialism. And I don't think the world's going to hell in a handbasket. I want to say that up front. But I want to point some things out to you that I don't think I do very clearly every week on the show because if I'd be remiss not to just cover this one last time at the start of what might be something. And the difference between 2018 and now is all economic. Before it was Fed policy that was leading us down a path in 2018 that led to the sell-off. But Fed policy can be reversed. It is hard to reverse virus policy. And what I mean by that is now you have an impingement on one of the biggest drivers in our country, tourism and travel. And a lot of that's being canceled. And if you know, a lot of you do, 70% of our economy is going out and spending. We're a consumer-based economy. There's a good number of us in the first and second quarters now of 2020, that are not going to be out there consuming. You'll be consuming in your daily lives. You'll be hoarding stuff from Costco and Kroger and CVS and Walgreens, but you're not making the trip to San Diego to go to the convention that you were planning to go to. Yeah, I don't know how South by Southwest is still putting on their thing. Like everyone else is canceling.
I thought they just canceled.
Oh, did they just cancel it and I missed it?
I thought like this morning or something.
They should.
Probably do.
Yeah.
They should.
I think it's canned, yeah.
They should. Because, I mean, and well, Tim, just because everyone else is doing it doesn't make it right. Listen, contrarian, I hear you. But I think out of an abundance of caution, maybe you just do that. And the problem with the reluctance to want to cancel, and it's easy for me in this studio to say this, oh, just cancel it. No. You're not affecting. Yeah, some big corporations will be affected, but the people that are really hurt by this are the people that work the event. They're local. They're the local catering company. They're the local cleaning company. They're the local Uber and Lyft drivers. There's such an immense wealth effect that's being sucked out of the economy right now. So when you just say it's the flu, which, by the way, can we grow up about that? Like, I think, one, we're finding out just how bad hygiene is here in America. And two, that maybe this could be something different than the flu. Maybe it's not. But it certainly is contagious.
Absolutely.
And so we should probably pay attention to that. But we should understand that what this is now materialized into, and whether it goes further than where we are right now, in the first week of March 2020, and if we just go back about our happy ways, or if it progresses, you need to understand that it's not a virus event right now. It's a credit event. And I want to give credit to Don. Mm-hmm. Credit to Don, because that's what I was, we were having our morning call and I was dancing around it, and Don goes, it's a credit event. And I'm like, that's exactly right. And that's what I'm trying to say. And so now it's demand for commodities goes down when these types of events happen. And someone could say, Tim, how can someone not going to a convention suck the life out of oil? Well, we're not traveling. There's no demand. And if they start canceling flights, if they start slowing down trains that burn diesel fuel, they start slowing down planes that burn Jet A, by the way, which it doesn't matter how cheap it is. If there's no demand, the plane's not going to take off. Then it all just trickles downstream. And so that's where we're at right now. And we're at this brilliant inflection point. That's why I want to focus on this for a second. I'm going to give you some stuff here in a moment that's really concrete, and it's going to sear it into your brain with the points I'm trying to make here. That we're at this huge juxtaposition or inflection point when you juxtapose the jobs report, which is backwards looking. 273,000 jobs, an expansion of the work week, which, by the way, is a huge deal percentage-wise, because, I mean, that means more people, more money. So right now, if we had this jobs report without the virus, this market would be to the moon. But that's backwards looking. And now, what are businesses doing? And the consumer confidence picture has not been, there's no snapshot of it right now. And it's one thing to say, well, the consumer's doing really well because they're cleaning out the shelves of Costco because people are out there buying supplies, they're hoarding toilet paper and antibacterial mm-hmm. Supplies. Maybe unnecessarily, maybe necessarily. Let me not make that judgment. I'm a stock person, not a pandemic person.
You could
always
use it later. But yeah,
I would love to know if you guys are hoarding stuff. Where are we
no.
at?
No. But I did stock up. I got made sure that we have some supplies.
Canned goods?
No. I'm on keto, man. They don't make no keto canned goods.
Okay. Are you on keto?
Oh, yeah.
I did keto for a while.
Oh,
we'll talk about that later. Yeah,
keto,
keto's great.
Well, you could eat like canned salmon, right? Canned tuna?
I don't know. Let me tell you something.
You could.
Can we discuss the disgusting level of a fish named tuna? Like the fact that they have to, canned fish, Danny. The fact
I'm
on
sorry,
a
I, no no a I want to here he goes
I want to talk
goes.
I want to talk to you about this. The fact that they have to classify. There's no other fish where they go, hey, want some mackerel fish? Hey, would you like some shark fish? Hey, would you? No, they don't do that with any flounder fish for dinner, Danny. No. But because tuna is so disgusting in a can, and it smells so god awful that nobody goes, hey, wow, what is that wonderful bouquet of aroma in my house? Did somebody open a can of tuna? Said no one ever. And by the way, person in the workplace that puts that in the microwave with their broccoli casserole, go to hell.
All right. That's a whole other realm. But I see, kind of get where you're
They have to call it. They have to label it tuna fish, lest you think they packed garbage into a can and then sealed it up hermetically for you to open 20 years later. Because that's what chicken of the sea is.
I love tuna fish.
No!
I do too.
This is a deli across the street.
What about sardines? They don't call them sardine fish. They smell worse.
They're awful.
They make a good point. Nobody does call it like anchovy fish.
No, they don't because it's so identifiable.
Right.
Tuna is so unidentifiable. What could possibly be in that can that they're like, we better just tell them what it is, boys, because no one's going to believe something this awful can be edible.
Yeah. Fair.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. All right. Fair critique. Yeah.
I appreciate that very much because that is god awfulness. Now back to what I was saying.
Yes.
What? Do you remember Jessica Simpson not being sure if chicken of the sea was chicken or tuna?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I just got taken back to 2003. Is that real? That's real, right?
That's a real clip. That's a clip. We can put that in.
That's a clip.
Yeah.
By the way.
It says chicken on the can.
You know what?
Chicken of the sea.
By the way, Don.
So it's not tuna?
I didn't get to do this with you because I'm the one who calls Don.
She's talking about retiring.
Jessica, from what?
Never mind.
What the hell would she retire from?
She did write a book recently.
Like, she's just a personality. Like, I'm going to retire from me.
Retiring from Instagram.
Like, what would she retire? Like, who were you thinking of?
Never mind.
I'm really curious who you were. Were you thinking of Maria Sharapova?
No, Britney Spears is who I was thinking of.
All right.
What, from singing? Britney Spears?
Yeah, Britney Spears.
Wait, can't require. Wait,
was,
from being
was what's her nuts? Who were we just talking about?
Jessica Simpson.
Was she a singer?
No, I just got. When you said minute, Jessica Simpson.
No, why was she famous before? Like, what led to her?
Oh, no. All right.
What led to her fame?
That's a little good.
Now you're going to have to look that up.
Anyway. Go about your day. I'll get back. And by the way, South by Southwest is not canceled. That was incorrect.
No, okay.
As of right now on March 6th, it is still technically going.
I just don't know how you don't.
Yeah.
Where
a lot of companies are canceling their earnings, and they're going to do video conferences.
So, well, not earnings, but they're canceling their investor
annual
days.
Their investor days and stuff like that.
So here's where we're at, juxtaposed on this, as some would say, beautiful jobs report and this horrible coronavirus, which really has turned into a credit crisis. We're at this inflection point, and I don't think there's something I could do more now than, and I don't know why this has been in the news a lot lately, but it's been popping up in some of my Twitter feeds. The Warren Buffett, October 16th, 2008, op-ed, where he says, does anyone remember this? Buy American, period, I am. Do you remember that?
That does sound familiar. Yeah.
This headline rings a bell. This has been popping up in my Twitter feed a lot. And so I have no idea why, but I'm like, well, let me go back and read this. I was a young pup in Investor's Business Daily in October. I just started there. William O'Neill had hired me just out of the Marine Corps earlier that year in February, early March. And this came about in October. And so I want to read a few things to you as we, I believe, are at a major inflection point for the market and the economy. So Warren starts out with, the financial world is a mess, both the United States and abroad. Its problems, moreover, have been leaking into the general economy. And the leaks now are turning into a gusher. That sentence could be written in 2008, or it could be written in 2020. In the near term, unemployment will rise, business activity will falter, and headlines will continue to be scary. That sentence could be written in October of 2008, or March of 2020. But here is where we're going to get to some really important things here. So I've been buying American stocks. This is my personal account I've been talking about, in which I previously owned nothing but United States government bonds. This description leaves aside my Berkshire Hathaway holdings, which I've given away to Bill Gates. It just says in philanthropy. If prices keep looking attractive, my non-Berkshire net worth will soon be 100% in United States equities. Why? A simple rule dictates my buying. Be fearful when others are greedy, and greedy when others are fearful. Now, I'm going to pause. I'm going to give a little commentary. This is all going to give Don a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm setting Don up, and I'm setting you up, Daniel, okay? But I'll let you know when I'm done setting you both up, okay?
Okay.
unless I really go off the beaten path, and you got to bring it back and just bring in the Tim Turpeter.
Yeah.
So don't nod off. Pay attention.
Don't nod off.
can you repeat when he put the, when this was published?
October 16th, 2008.
Okay.
It's a New York Times op-ed. So a simple rule dictates my buying. Be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. Now, he also has that when there's blood on the streets, go buy equities. And I lamented last week, if there's blood in your streets, you probably live in a bad neighborhood. Get inside, lock the doors, shut the windows, and pray to God they don't come for you. You can fight back if you want, but maybe we just get out of the streets when there's a gunfight. That's kind of like my whole point with markets. When the market's path isn't clear, step aside, because there are no heroes. Heroes have money to burn. Heroes, if you want to like...
heroes die.
Heroes do die. Or they sometimes they die on the cross.
Yeah. Cowards live. That's the way to go. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You know what? This is a great point Zach makes. Yeah. Zach is 27.
You got it.
I guess that.
You're spot on.
Thanks. Zach is 27. And so when he says cowards live.
Yeah.
Yeah, cowards in the market live. They don't die on a cross. They don't make a stand. I'm buying.
I'm going to hold.
I'm going to hold
through this pain.
Going all in.
I'm
going
to hold me some Tesla from 1,000. When you could just re-enter it, maybe 30% lower.
Market 17% lower, I'm all in. I think it's going higher now.
It's time.
And YOLO, you only live once. And so...
especially if you're a hero.
That's exactly it. Yeah. It's like Billy Joel said, only the good die young.
Yeah, yeah.
Come out, Virginia, don't make me wait. You Catholic girls... Wait. Oh, I messed up the lyric. What is it? Someone help me out.
Don, come on, Don.
Don, sorry, much too late.
Oh, much too late, yes. Sooner or later, it comes down to fate.
There's another one.
I might as well be the one.
Another drop for you.
Only the good die young. By the way, Don, before we started, the best intro. I'm actually thinking of having Zach switch up the intro to the drum solo from Van Halen's Hot for Teacher, which is the best intro to any song ever produced.
I don't think I'd argue with that.
Now, one of the other best ones, I don't know if, see, Hot for Teacher, its intro isn't as iconic as Under Pressure. Dun, dun, dun. No. Yeah. Dun, under Pressure.
Yeah,
Pressure.
That's right.
Yeah. Pressure. Yeah.
That's
Don't Say Vanilla Ice.
No, that's not. I saw the one.
Bowie and Queen.
Yeah.
I saw Millie Vanilli doing an interview the other night.
Right.
They're talking about doing some movie.
Millie Vanilli.
Yeah, they were limp syncing frauds.
Did you say limp? Said lip.
Millie Vanilli.
Millie Vanilli.
I could have swore you just said limp. Seeking and I'm
all
like,
right.
No. Okay. Lip sinking.
All right, hold on, real quick, just to get us back on course.
Right,
Tim. Fortune favors the bold, right?
You gotta
make big bets and swing for the fences. It's the only way to win. Shoot for the moon, you'll land among the stars, right?
Sure.
Yeah, you go home broke too.
Yeah,
right?
Sometimes you do win. I mean, sometimes.
Don't
you win.
Worry, son. You didn't need to go to college.
That's right. Yeah.
A simple rule dictates my buying, says Buffett. Be fearful when others are greedy, and greedy when others are fearful. And most certainly, fear is now widespread. This whole thing could be written today. And fear is most certainly widespread, gripping even seasoned investors. To be sure, investors are right to be wary of highly leveraged entities or businesses in weak competitive positions. But fears regarding the long-term prosperity of the nation's many sound companies make no sense. These businesses will indeed suffer earnings hiccups, as they have always, but most major companies will be setting a new major profit record 5, 10, and 20 years from now. Let me be clear on one point. I can't predict the short-term movements of the stock market. I haven't the fanciest idea whether stocks go higher or lower a month or a year from now. What is likely, however, is that the market will move higher, perhaps substantially, so well before either sentiment or the economy turns up. So if you wait for the robin, spring will be over. Now, I don't disagree with any of what's written there. Okay? I said, you don't bet against the American economy, the American ingenuity. From out of the morass of 2009 came some of the greatest companies that we know right now, and even better versions of Google, Amazon, and Facebook was born out of that time frame too. Now, someone might say, that's a great American company. Well, you're talking on it, right? you can't argue what happened. Anyway, I don't want to get into the whole discussion of the great American companies, but I think my point's been made here. I want to talk to you about the efficacy of timing. You can time. And to say that you can't is, anyone who tells you that you can't is a downright lie. Anyone who tells you that you can't figure out when is a good time to be buying stocks or a bad time to be buying stocks, is really what they're telling you is they don't know how. And so when you hear the Josh Browns, the Linksters, the whoever on the Fast Monies telling you that, you know, I've got boomers, you know, they use a lot of bravado here. I've got boomers telling me if I didn't sell for Saddam, I'm not selling for this. And that's just bravado. That's just people trying to justify their own positioning, meaning they don't know how to sell, that they're going to double down on whatever it is they have, and they're going to justify what they need to say. They're going to justify their words to accentuate their current positions. Okay? It's only clear in hindsight that 2008 was 2008. And I want to use facts, though, not just my words, like just my thoughts to actually accentuate this point. So let me give you October of 2008. And so on October 13, on January 1, let me start off with the year. On January 1, the S&P 500 was 1378. Okay. In September, it was around September 8th or September 18th. My favorite place ever. One of my favorite places, Investors Business Daily, even if sometimes I get on them, came out with the best thing ever said in the paper was, the course is clear, raise cash. And I remember having everyone, a lot of people know Uncle Tony. I remember having these discussions with Uncle Tony on the way home from IBD in LA. I lived in San Diego at the time. And I'm like, Tony, you got to get out. And Tony was not arguing. He was like, what are you talking about? That, you know, the whole mantra, it'll come back, you buy and hold. And then Tony got out. Tony sold out and he saved himself a tremendous amount of money in pain. October 13th, the S&P is trading 912. On October 14th, the S&P is trading 1009. So the S&P went up in one day 10.65%. On October 14th, it opened up at 1009. On October 15th, it opened up at 994. No big deal. No, that's not. It's only a 1.5% decline. On the 15th to the 16th, when it opened up, the S&P was trading 909. That's a decline of about 9%. Does that trading percentage, I know 10% is excessive, but those numbers, do they sound similar? Does it sound like we're living through a little bit of period like that right now?
Very volatile, yes.
Yeah. On March 9th, by the way, IBD nailed the bottom on this, but on March 9th, the S&P 500 was trading 676. So from top to bottom, you lost about 51% from January 1st through March 9th of 2009, okay? In the S&P.
And there were a lot less heroes.
A lot less heroes. From when Buffett wrote his op-ed by American, I am, the S&P lost another 25.6%. And so stock nerds and market lovers and the loved ones that have been given this podcast, here's the point. You could have cut your losses in half. If you listened to Buffett and doubled down on your positions in October, you exacerbated your losses. The market at that point, don't you see what I'm saying here? The market up until that point had lost 25, 26%. The market from when Buffett penned his famous op-ed to when it finally bottomed out in March of 2009, it went down the second half. The second shoe dropped. And so
double waterfall.
And let's, I'm not contesting Buffett's words. He tells you, I don't know when the market's going to bottom, but he has money to cushion the blow. You don't. If you had $1 million to start with and you lost another quarter of it, what did, well, Tim, I didn't sell anything. Really? You didn't? Or what's worse, how many people doubled down in periods like this? And they're listening to these TV, these people on TV owe you nothing. Listen, I'm telling you up front, stock nerds and market lovers, I don't owe you anything. The thing I owe everything to is the clients. But you listening to the other sound of this, if you're just along for the ride, one, thank you. And two, I owe you nothing. I don't have to sell you on anything. I'm not trying to sell you on anything. I don't have to do this show. We do it out of love. We do it to keep the clients informed. We do it because we have this community around us that loves us and supports us, and we're grateful for it. But other than that, I owe you nothing. I don't have to justify anything to you. I just think that this industry is so fraught with bravado and machismo, and it's such a waste. I don't need to lose 50% of your money to feel like a man. But some of you,
that's funny,
right? But some of you out there, you feel like, you like that?
No, this song popped in my head.
Oh, tell me what you got.
Well, I changed the lyrics a little bit, but it's like how Willie Nelson, Mama, don't let your cowards grow up to be heroes, because we're talking about losing 50%.
Oh, my gosh.
Change the lyrics? No. Oh, yeah. Be perfect. Be perfect.
I'll continue. So, but some of you just feel this compulsive need to keep, you know, I'm going to nibble here and buy on the way down. And I'm going to tell you the things that we did, but we sold. And I'm going to tell you something. A lot of you will come back at me and say, you know, Tim, that revered IBD you talk about, they had some false bottoms in there too. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because it's a market and anything can happen. You can always, if you think them, I mean, think about a 10% reversal day. I would want to buy that too. Now, if I knew the market was going to go down another 25%, I'd say, hey, that's a false profit over there. Don't be buying that. But you don't know. You don't know which days are going to lead to the massive reversal. And so what you want to be able to do is have some sell rules, have some buy rules that get you into the market, but you have to be able to enact what gets you out right away and not argue with it and fall back on things that say, well, I'm buying good companies. I heard, man, I just don't want to use names because I think it's derogatory to what I'm saying. I heard someone say today, I bought Wynn, W-Y-N-N, because it's got a good yield. And how much lower can it go? Well, what are you talking about? How much lower can it go? If we really do not, if people, it's not that the coronavirus fears are over in Asia.
People stop going to casinos.
Maybe, man. It took Chipotle like 18, 20 months to overcome their food poisoning issues till it went up to its recent highs. Like when are people going to get on a plane and go, I'm touching handrails again dangerously. And so like, why do you, I'm pulling door handles and touching my face. Like why? Like why not wait for something that gives you an edge as an investor? Saying I'm buying American and I'm buying good companies gives you no edge. Saying I'm buying companies with high dividends gives you no edge. Saying I'm buying companies that are cheap relative price to earnings gives you no edge. Price to earnings are earned, and if they're going down in price, I'm not saying that it's all justified, but I'm not smart enough to figure out which ones are and which ones aren't. Let the market tell you when the dust settles, and right now the dust certainly has not settled. And high yields, playoffs. It's a Jim Mora quote. High yields? Holy hell. How many companies with high yields won't be around in a year? Let's take that number. I sold my ARI, my beloved 10% yielding. No, the price didn't make sense anymore. Can they sustain that? What? What? You know, I keep hearing, buy the housing stocks, buy the housing stocks, buy the housing stocks. It screams to me at this moment in time, just like 2008. Hey, the Fed cut rates. It's good. Let's buy some more homes. I'm not saying it's going to do that, but you won't know it is that until it's over. Oh, we should have saw that coming, right? I'm putting the marker down right now. It's March. It's the first week of March, 2020. And whether this go, I will assure you this, that if this turns out to be a blip and we go higher from here, I will be all in with two fists, Danny's fist and Don's fist, grabbing at equities. Because I believe in America. But because I have a little savoir-faire, and because I have a little experience, and because I know how to read a chart, I know now is not the time to be like Kenny Rogers.
To be a hero, yeah.
I don't need to be a gambler. He said you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And right now, should be a lot of folding going on. Well, Tim, how do I get better prices? You will make more money. See, people don't believe this. They're because they've got this, the way the commercials work, the way the marketing works, because nobody, where this is the, I'm telling you, stock nerds, the money industry, the financial industry is the only industry that will tell you when things are bad, give us more. When you have emphysema, there's no doctor that says, smoke a couple more, it'll get better. When your house is on fire, they don't say, do you have a can of gasoline? That'll help the situation. The banking industry, the finance industry, that bank's in trouble. You know what? Washington Mutual, that bank's in trouble. I'm going to go make my biggest deposit ever into Washington Mutual. Said no one ever. But they didn't stop taking money. Schwab's not going to stop taking your trades. Well, Tim, they're free. Empty calories, man. Empty calories. Listen, timing, for lack of a better analogy here, is everything.
Timing counts.
And when people tell you that you can't, it's not true. And I just don't think me telling you that works. I think me giving you these details really explains, because I know there's a good number of our audience that lived through the 08, 01 markets. And when someone says it came back stronger, we have the America we live in. I'm going to do the analogy now because I started it. We have the America we have because of sacrifice by brave women and men that serve this country's armed forces, right? They fight off tyranny. There's nothing like that in the stock market. There's nothing. I served for 10 years. I flew helicopters in the war 3 times. There's nothing like it. The stock market, when someone compares the stock market to your house, you can do one of two things. Just turn around and walk away or give them the finger. Those are your only two choices. Because when they say if your house goes down in value 10%, you're not moving, are you?
Yeah, but it's got utility. You live there.
You don't have to live in your stocks. These aren't your marriages. It doesn't matter how long you owned it. If you've made $2 million, the quickest way to be a millionaire is to take $2 million in 2008 and cut it in half. Don't do that. You don't have to do that. And we're at the position right now in the first week of 2020. Where should we sell? Should we buy more? Do we hold? What did Josh Brown say? Did he give me a platitude? Did he talk snarky to me? Did he give me a Beastie Boys quote? Just ignore
Wu-Tang
it.
Clan.
Wu-Tang, what did Wu-Tang Finance say? Like, just ignore it all. Ignore me. But I know how to get in and I know how to get out. And I know here at this firm, you'll never be 2008ed. And the question to ask everybody, the question to ask us, the question to ask anybody that wants to pontificate on these topics, and I'm fair game too, Danny's fair game, Don's fair game, what gets you in?
Yeah, what's your self-discipline?
And what would cause you to get out? And I can tell you the wrong words to get in are valuation, and the wrong words to get out are valuation. You buy on the fundamentals and technicals, and you sell only on the technicals. Don, I'm looking for some of your... Go ahead, Danny.
Well, very quick.
Go ahead.
If you just do the valuations like you're talking about, it's too late. Everybody else has realized those same valuations and the price has already moved, either to the upside when you're trying to get in or to the downside when you're trying to get out. It's already going to be reflected. All right, go ahead.
So, Don, I'm just looking for your... give me some of your soul rules. Give me some of your thoughts on the compare... I didn't really mean to make this a comparison to 08, but I don't know why this whole Buffett op-ed has been popping up in a lot of my Twitter timeline lately, but it has been. And so what are some of your soul rules, Don? What are some of your thoughts on when to get back in or just when to stay clear?
I'll bet nobody bringing that up in your Twitter timeline is commenting that we fell, like, would you say 26% more after we published that?
Yep.
Are they?
25 points.
You just... I'm going to refer back to some of the facts that I unearthed during my research for the last bear market lunch and learn webinar that I did, where it's just obvious that the markets don't fall apart completely, don't get really bad, don't deteriorate significantly until we're under the 200-day moving average. And we said it last Friday when we in our podcast, and we'll reiterate it again, we're under the 200-day moving average on the S&P 500, despite the fact that we had huge bounces on Monday and Wednesday of this last week. We're not going to make, at this point, lower lows, it doesn't look like. I mean, we may by the close, but we're just where we were. Some of the biggest gains, but also some of the biggest losses happen when you're under the 200-day moving average, and that's just the line in the sand that you need to draw when you're trying to decide if you want to protect your portfolio or not. That's kind of a last resort. Now, we as a company look at multiple time frames, and there's a time to be very heavy long and a time to not be. And this has fallen in the time to not be category because we've deteriorated short term, intermediate term, and now long term.
And so, you know, and look, I'll tell you the four things I did this week. You know, the thought is if they work, you hold them, and the moment they stop working, you get out of them. Mm-hmm. I bought this week GOLD, Barrick Gold. I bought THL, which is Treasuries. I bought LK and BYND, and I document all this on the videos, by mm-hmm. the way. And so we do videos 5 nights a week at Revere Asset. They're free. We don't make you register for anything. You just click and lock, watch them. And again, we do that as a service for the client. So they always are abreast of what we're thinking in the markets. Look, GOLD, gold had another Friday, like gold, the metal, and GOLD had another Friday reversal, like negative reversal. That people are getting liquidated and they've got to sell.
They're good stuff.
To cover their bad
margin
stuff.
Margin calls.
And so I got out of gold just for a really small loss. I still got the bond position.
Lucky, which is up like 4%.
That's crazy.
And it's just like a week.
Yeah, it's crazy on a bond position. Luck and Coffee, LK, that was looking great on Thursday and then Friday. Yeah, not so much. Sold that for...
down much more than from where we sold it.
Sold that for a 4% loss. And someone might say...
down later.
And I like covering the losses with you stock nerds because when you do that, look, and BYND, that could have gone better. Like that was going really well on Wednesday and then Thursday, just sell it. Just get me out of it. But when you keep...
ZM, winner on Thursday, loser on Friday.
Yeah, and when you sell... your laggards in a market environment like this, and you keep your losses to single digits, it is the best thing you can do.
Yeah, leverage works both ways.
Well, it's the best thing you can do because you're limiting your, like,
compounding.
That 4, 6, 8% loss, it'll get a lot worse. And you know what I'm talking about. Well, Tim, I'll just wait for it to come back. Look, I don't know if Luckin is going to come back. Maybe next week it will, but from where I bought it, from a proper buy area, technically, why am I going to take that chance? Like, I can limit the loss.
And you can always buy back in.
G-O-L-D. Well, Tim, it's Barrick Gold. It's gold. And it's not acting the way I thought it was. It reversed 3% in a morning. Get me out. That's not the behavior of leaders. We're not day trading here. We're protecting. This market is not a buyer's market. And it just leads you to go, you know what? Until this environment improves, you're not going to see a lot of trading like this.
Until it breaks out.
Yeah, this market has failed on multiple levels now, and now the market needs to prove it's worthy of our capital. But I got it. I can't. And I started out telling you that a lot of you don't think the market can go down. And I know who the long-term stock nerds are and market lovers are, and I know there's a newer audience. You're so attached to the outcome. It has to be successful. I'm going to hold it till it is. But because we use position sizing as our weapon, I'm not. It's a 5% position. It's a 4% position. Luckin Coffee was a 4% position against an entire portfolio. If it works like other small trial positions, like the 75 and then follow on 10% gain in Tesla did this year, great. If not, nip it in the bud and move on. And that's what you do. Sell with impunity right here. There are no heroes. I'm sorry, Don. I cut you off, man.
No, I think I summed it up well enough. So I don't think you cut me off. It's like we said last week on the show. We're going to see how the market behaves when it comes back up and tests the overhead 200-day moving average. It got through it, and then it failed again. That's the market telling you something.
Yeah, so I'd like to jump in. So, you know, a couple things. The market, you know, broke down week and 10 days ago, a couple weeks ago. And then it looked like it was starting to, you have those big up days. You had a couple up days, looked like it was stabilizing. And that's when we took those couple of positions. Like you said, you don't know that it's going to rally. By the way, we also sold SPY, SP with the S&P 500 ETF. That was a little over 6% loss. We bought that. It was above the 200-day moving average, and it broke the 200-day, and you got to respect the 200-day. Don, what's that stat? When it's below the 200-day, monthly average monthly returns are negative 2.8 or 2.6, and when it's above the 200-day, it's positive 0.8 per month. So you don't really want to play around with the 200. Now, the NASDAQ is still above the 200-day moving average. That's the one position we still have is a QQQ. But most of the other things. So when we got in after that last bounce, we got in gold, we got in LK, Luckin Coffee, those positions you were talking about. And then the market turned back out over and rolled over. And instead of being a hero, we said, you know what? We're not going to play this game. We're going to get defensive because we will hit an uptrend that is sustainable. And when we do, you'll have those leading stocks and we'll get back into SPY or equivalent S&P index fund. And you'll be able to fight another day when it's much more stable. Right now, the risk is very high. And because like Tim was talking about with the coronavirus, if it's more the emotion and the reactions of the people, if they actually start tightening up even more and more and restricting travel, they stop doing things, people's behavior is starting to change. And I'll tell you what, if consumer confidence, like you said, you haven't gotten that number yet, but all of a sudden if it comes out and it's eroded pretty badly, that's going to have a psyche on the stock market. It's not about fundamentals. It's about the buyers and sellers and the belief in the market at any given time.
Do I think we're on the cusp of a recession? I don't. I mean, based on that jobs report, but can the stock market trigger the consumer into causing the self-inflicted recession by just stopping spending?
Yes.
Yes. The answer is absolutely, positively, yes. We can trip fall into a recessionary period or zone just because we stopped spending.
And again, you've also got to separate Wall Street from Main Street. Sometimes the market, the Main Street business can be doing well and Wall Street, you know, sells off. Conversely, sometimes
you're in a recession and the market will start rallying before you come out of the recession. So they're not always in tandem. Everybody thinks they are.
Oh, they're, yeah.
One last thing. You were talking about the credit crisis. You know, I just want to bring something up, folks, because Tim talked about the price of oil, and oil is just getting slaughtered on Friday, and it's down very low. Now, a big percentage, over 20% of the high yield bonds or junk bonds is in the energy space. Well, on the upstream producers, there's a lot of upstream oil energy companies that are actually going bankruptcies have been on the rise. Okay. Now hedging will put that off a little bit. We'll delay some of that and mask it for a couple quarters. But you know, I've got a buddy that's actually in the biz. That's what he does. And he said, he texted me the other day and said, hey, have you seen this? Bankruptcies started to come on the rise. That's what happened to the last high yield credit crisis. By the way, do you know the difference between a high yield bond and a junk bond? When your broker's trying to sell it to you, it's a high yield bond. When he's trying to make you sell it so he can make you buy something else, then it's a junk bond. There's no difference. They're the same. They're lower credit rating. And defaults are going up.
Long-term viewers of the videos know that I talk about it pretty often, that when oil is below 50, it's trouble for the market. Mm-hmm. We started selling stocks, stock nerds and market lovers, two Fridays ago. Like, this isn't... We've been lightening up since... For the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe long. Is it...
In layers. It's 2 weeks.
Yeah. And so... That's why it can be. I don't have to defend anything, you know. And I think a lot of people that are giving you the platitudes of boomers. If I didn't sell for Saddam, I'm not. You know, I don't need to do that. Just and then again, by the way, to each their own. If that's a trading plan of yours that you just hold through everything and you put more money in and you have that ability because you have that kind of income source, good on you. But look, when 65% of our stock market is made up of passive investors. The good stocks go down with the bad. And it the whoosh when they go to sell finally is going to be so dramatic. Way too dramatic. And so I just want you to keep that in mind that it can always get worse.
And remember, you said that, you know, when oil, it's trouble for the markets when oil's below 50. It's around 40 now. Right. That's 20% lower than that kind of line in the sand.
Yeah, and God, just think about all the people buying the oil stocks because of the yield. I mean, it just...
if you wait a little longer, the yield may be a lot higher.
I don't even think it's funny. I just think that it's such a... I don't blame people. Are fed this. They're fed this by people that don't invest or trade for a living. They're just salespeople.
They're asset gatherers.
Yeah, and I don't blame consumers. Danny wasn't laughing at you on the other end of this microphone. It's just such bad advice. And then they become so definitive when they say, you know, if your advisor really loves you, he has you in a 60-40 portfolio. And they're just indexing. And it's like, well, you could do that at home and not even need an advisor. Like, you want to do that, just do that. But like the reason why you have someone to give you advice isn't to tell you to hold on when your house is on fire, just stay in the bedroom, maybe go in the closet and hide. It's to know when to sell. Stock nerds, not only are we really good at picking stocks and ETFs, people pay us to sell. Get you out of the proverbial house on fire unscathed. And for those people to just tell you, hunker down, it'll get better.
Oh, it'll come back.
It's not their money. It's yours. And I always contend that how much more wealthier would you be? And I'm not talking in terms of exuberance. I'm talking about how much better would your life be if every time these things happened, or if you could just stop 2008 from happening or 2001 from happening to yourself, do your kids have to take loans out for college? Could you put your parents in a good facility so they're well taken care of and you don't have to worry? What could you be doing that's different? The reason why I get so adamant and passionate about people that tell you to hunker down is because... doing the wrong thing in the wrong market is devastating, not just to the person it's being done to, but to the family around them. And it has devastating effects. And so, it's really serious. And we try to do it in an enlightening way. So you don't just leave, right? I mean, it can't be all doom and gloom, right? I mean, we've got to get some Hanford teacher in there. But I mean, it's really serious. And you can get back, you can always get back in. But once they take the money from you, it's gone. Just know that. You got anything else, Dan?
Well, yes, very quickly, we were talking about, at the places where they tell you to buy and hold or stay the course or 60-40, they actually call them advisors to you. They call themselves advisors to you, but behind the scenes, they actually call themselves and they're told you're an asset gatherer. You need to go manage the relationship, go play golf with the client, go do stuff, and then we're just going to farm out and put them in a fund of funds, put them in a pie chart, and that's it. Move on to the next person. They're not actively making the decisions. Now, getting into that, next week, we kind of ran out of time today, but next week I do want to take this on because I had a guy call me. Mm-hmm. A guy called me just yesterday evening, and he said, how do you define fiduciary? Because he went to had a meeting with one of the big three discount brokerage firms. I'm not going to name names, but it's either Schwab, TD, or Fidelity. He said, what is your definition of fiduciary, and how do you define active management? Because they kind of insinuate, they gave me this, and it was both. And anyway, I'm going to talk about that next week. Folks, listen, if you like...
Hold on, we got to go to... One second. This is the way we do this. Don, what are you looking for next week? Give that to us. Danny, you wrap up the show, and then I'll give them the absolute last word.
Okay.
I'm keeping my eye on that 30-50 level for the S&P 500. That's the 200-day moving average, and that's been the line that we've been battling back and forth on all week. That's the key number to me.
And it's the tennis net, Don, not the badminton net.
About volleyball, Dan?
For those of you follow him on Twitter, you'd understand that joke.
Was that all you got, Danny? Wrap up the show.
All right, folks, listen, if you like what you heard.
Is this your first time here?
I was thinking he was going to step in and help.
You got excited about the tennis talk.
Yeah, I did. I did.
Does he have those socks with a little
ball? Listen to you, badminton guy. All right. If you like what you heard, tell a friend, tell a neighbor. If you want to get our research or have somebody let your friend know about our research, just tell them to go to revereasset.com. They can sign up for our daily market insight, and this podcast will be delivered to them every Saturday morning. We won't spam anybody. We don't reach out to them. It's up to you, the listener, to reach out to us if you need a free complimentary portfolio review, or you just want to ask advice or have a question. You can email any of us at dan@revereasset.com, tim@revereasset, or don@revereasset. You can follow me on Twitter @1 Danny Stewart, @TJReazor, or @DVandenBoard. You can also call us old school at 855 Real Wealth.
So I'd like to explain how the algorithms and the people that control large money sell their junk, sell their trash to individual investors, and how you can spot this and avoid it. So American Airlines has been beaten down. American Airlines is down like 40-50%, right? Mm-hmm. It's this year, and it's just getting crushed, okay? So American Airlines opens down with the market, and then meaning the computers and the big money people, put a buy program into American. Now, American Airlines, mm-hmm. they took it from a low of 1480 to above 17. And because stock nerds and market lovers, because they know as consumers, we're so conditioned to buying things on sale and we want to nail the bottom and the way all the marketing works around investing. What they did was they raised the bids, and when you stepped into there was no funds buying that stock. There was no quote unquote serious money buying that stock. It was you. And when you started buying American Airlines, the people that were stuck with that pig, They unloaded it to you. Take my shares gladly.
They were priming the pump just like an IPO.
It's called cash for clunkers. And so what they did was
flying clunkers.
They told they took your cash and they sold you a clunker. And as I talk to you right now, it's now trading $15.90. So it's not completely collapsed from where it opened, but that's how they get you. Because they know you want to nail the bottom. That you have this insistence on being right. Like it's something human about us. Like we have to be right, have to get the bottom, have to be able to tell. Investing is so solitary. Like nobody cares about your investing, by the way. Like I go home and I don't think Tanya knows anything that goes on in my life. And not because we don't talk. We talk about a lot of things. This is just not one of them. It's just not interesting to her. And so you feel this need to be right. You're competitive with yourself and you want to nail the bottom in American and you want to be the one that rides it back up to 30 because it's an American company. Travel's going to come back. And to see the thing here is that the market is a forward-looking vehicle by 6 to 9 months. Could American reverse? Could it go back to old highs? Yeah, it's a market. Anything can happen. But I will make more money waiting for those signs of crossing back through the 200-day, maybe an 821 cross on a daily. On the indices, if I were to maybe get a high of the low bar back above the 200-day, and then if I want to be really safe, how about on a daily chart, just two closes above a 21-period exponential moving average? Well, Tim, that's so far away. Okay, I get you. How about taking it down to a 195-minute chart or a 78-minute chart and then know where your stop-out point is? Those are called buy rules. I've got them. You should have them too. If your loved ones or the people that you know are doing business with people that can't enunciate like I just did, please, we'd love it if you sent them our way. We'll see you next week on New Money.